Welcome to the Everyday Ironman Podcast, where we talk to real athletes just like you and me that are working to achieve an incredible goal. My name is Mike Bosch, and I'm excited to have with me today recent finisher of Ironman 70.3 Texas, Alisa Box. Alisa, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I am excited to have you on the podcast today. I'm excited to hear all about your experience in Galveston. Sometimes I refer to it as Ironman 70.3 Galveston. Sometimes I refer to it as Ironman 70.3 Texas. But listeners of my podcast know I have a lot of experience down there. I've raced it. I've volunteered. I was part of a relay. It's a course that while I don't do the same course twice, it is a course that I'm very, very familiar with, and I am really excited to talk about your experience because I believe you had an incredible race. Is that true?
I did. Unexpectedly had a pretty good race.
Yeah, so I am really, really excited about that. And you are also a tryout athlete, same as I.
Yes, I am.
So I'm excited about that. I'm now in my third year as a Tridot ambassador, and we are not sponsored by Tridot, but you wouldn't know that if you listen to the podcast on a regular basis because it comes up all the time. But I am really, really happy being part of both that training platform and that community that Tridot has created. Hopefully you experience the same.
Yes.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I know that you are new to our podcast, and that is perfectly fine, but our audience always expects that we would get a little bit of an introduction of who our guest is. And so what we like to do is just kind of level set of what kind of time constraints we're balancing. So we like to know, you know, are we married or are we in a relationship? Do we have children or you know, high maintenance pets, because I've got both and that's the thing, right? Do we work or go to school full time? And then what kind of athletic background did you have coming into triathlon? Because we talk about it a lot on the podcast, Alisa. Triathlon is not a sport that we grew up playing as kids, right? You might have played soccer or baseball, or some people had a swimming background, or some people had a running background, but triathlon is not part of standard youth sports programs. So we like to just understand what kind of athletic background somebody had. So if we can start there, and if you blank out on any one of the questions, don't worry, I will help you through the process.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So I am an orthopedic nurse. I work for a spine surgeon.
Oh, wow.
I work over 40 hours pretty much every week. So full time, I'm in a clinical setting. So typical 8 to 5 hours in a pretty busy clinic. I am in a relationship. My boyfriend lives about an hour away.
Okay.
So a little bit of a long distance.
Yep.
But not too far. And then I have a daughter who's 10 and he has a son that's 12. He's also an Ironman.
Really?
So he understands. We're on the same page of training and, you know.
That is awesome.
All of that.
Mm-hmm. That is awesome. And what about an athletic background? What kind of athletic background did you have?
So I did grow up swimming pretty young. I live on the coast in Mississippi. So we had a swim team.
Okay.
So I was swimming very young. Kind of got out of it maybe, you know, around 10 and then in high school, we had a swim team, so I joined later in high school and then quit swimming again until I discovered triathlons later in upper 20s.
Wow.
But other than that, I didn't play a whole lot of sports. I never ran. I was never a runner. You know, didn't do track. I hated the 1 mile PE test kind of thing.
That is funny. So when you were swimming, were you doing short, like sprint type stuff, or were you doing some of the longer endurance swims?
So growing up, it was all just short, you know, 25 yards, 100 max. I think once we were in high school, and I think they had the 500, but I was never doing those types of distances back then.
Gotcha.
Just the little sprints.
Okay. And so how did you get from swimming as a young child and then swimming in high school into triathlon? How did you transition from, or I guess, how were you introduced to triathlon initially?
So when I was pregnant, I gained a ton of weight and I was just trying to lose baby weight. And I ended up joining a gym who encouraged us to sign up as relays for a triathlon.
Really?
And by that point, I had started running a little bit. So I decided just to do the run portion.
Okay.
And I remember watching that triathlon and thinking, man, I want to do the whole thing one day. Like, I want to do the whole swim, bike, run. And I ended up buying a bike, I think that, you know, like 2 months later, and I didn't even know how to ride it. I just found one online and decided to buy it. And then, you know, the rest is kind of history from there.
Wow. So your daughter's 10 now. How long ago did you do your very first organized triathlon all by yourself?
So the next year after I did that relay was 2017, and I decided to do a sprint in April.
Okay.
And so I did the sprint, and while I was training, I had some friends that were doing Gulf Coast in May.
Okay.
And I thought, like, what if I just keep training and I could do a half in May?
Yeah.
And that year, the swim was canceled. And I was just so mad because, you know, you put all the time into the pool. And so then
such
I
a
thought,
swimmer's,
you know,
mentality.
Right.
Everybody else is like, yay, the swim is canceled.
Yeah. And they had the full in November. So I thought, well, I could just keep training from here, and kind of went all out that first year and did a full in Florida in November.
Wow. And so you went pretty fast from run only relay to solo to full distance. That's a pretty quick transition. That's awesome. Good for you.
Yeah, I got hooked pretty quick.
Yeah. And so have you maintained a consistent training racing schedule since then, or did you take any breaks in between?
So after that, I just did a couple sprints the next season. I love Florida's course. I've done Gulf Coast several times.
Okay.
Being a swimmer, I love, you know, a rough ocean swim and then a easy bike course or a flat, you know, flat run, which kind of, you know, got me interested in Galveston. I just, anything that has the word flat in it, you know, grabs my attention.
Well, you can't trust Ironman's description of the courses, though, because, you know, everything is rolling and this and that.
Yeah.
Come on now. I don't know where their criteria is for that. We haven't figured that out yet. But yeah, just because Ironman says it's flat doesn't necessarily mean that it's flat. But I do hear what you're saying. That is cool.
Exactly.
So was this year your very first time doing Ironman 70.3 Texas?
Yes. Yeah, so I really didn't know anything about the race. I had a friend that was doing it, and she told me it was flat. That's all she said. She was like, you should do it. It's your type of race. It's flat. She told me it was windy, but I didn't kind of hear that part of it. The only thing I heard was the word flat, and I said, okay, I'll sign up. Let's do it.
That's funny. Well, the bike, I'll say this, the swim is pretty flat usually, so that's pretty flat. So there's some chop. The run or the bike course is for sure flat.
Yes.
That is a flat, fast course. The run course, I would say is flat, but there's a lot of turns, like a lot of turns. But anyway, well, we're going to get into that. So cool. So how long ago, did you sign up? Cause the race at the time of the recording, we're probably 3 weeks out, from the race, because I always like to be transparent. I had some technical difficulties. We actually were supposed to schedule, or we had this recording scheduled about 10 days ago, and I ran into some technical difficulties, and you bared with me, and I'm so appreciative of that. But we're about 3 weeks removed from the race. How long ago did you sign up for the race?
It must have been maybe early in the year. I actually did Cozumel 70.3 in the end of September, and I had a terrible race.
What?
And that was supposed to be like my dream race kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I kind of wanted revenge on that.
Okay.
So it was about, you know, 6 months after that race. So it must have been around January or so.
Okay.
If I had to guess.
Okay, and not that I don't want to delay us talking about Galveston much longer, but I do have to ask now, what was the impact at Cozumel? Because Cozumel is also my dream race, to be honest with you. And I have committed to racing Ironman Cozumel in 25. So next year, that's my race. Was there something that you ran into this year that you didn't expect?
Yes.
Do you mind sharing?
So, the swim, I think I swallowed a lot of ocean water.
Okay.
I only breathe out of one side. That was just kind of how I was taught growing up, and I just can't do the other side. So I was taking in ocean water, and I didn't think it affected me, but once I got on the bike, I started feeling pretty sick, and I couldn't take in nutrition because it was just making me feel more sick. So I just decided to kind of push through. And then by the time I got to the run, since I wasn't taking in the nutrition, my legs were just both of them cramping from the knee down, like every muscle, my toes, my feet, my calves. I would try to stretch, my left leg, and then the right one would cramp. So it was a, and it was, I mean, it was super hot too. That didn't help anything. So it just kind of all went downhill from there.
Gotcha. Well, I am definitely sorry to hear that because Cozumel, I've mentioned on the podcast before, I've been there on vacation multiple times. I love the island of Cozumel, and that is definitely a dream race of mine. Sorry to hear that you had a you had that experience. But hey, there's always next year or this year, I guess now, right? You could go back in September and get true revenge on the course.
Very tempting. It is a beautiful place.
Nice. Okay. Well, let's talk about Galveston. So you mentioned you live in Mississippi. So for my international listeners, that is about two states away, right? So you had to go through Louisiana and then it's Mississippi, right?
Yes, about 6.5 hours or
Six and
so.
a half hours. So not too bad. Not too bad. That's a nice drivable trip. So you didn't have to fly, so you were able to drive, right? Perfect. So you didn't have to worry about the logistics of shipping your bike or anything like that. Okay. So how far in advance did you get to Galveston? Because the race was on a Sunday, which means bike check-in would be Saturday, athlete check-in was Friday, right?
So we got there on Thursday,
On
which,
Thursday.
I learned, after a couple races, the earlier you get there, I feel like the better, because then you get time to do things without having to rush, and I think it gives your body kind of that little bit of rest that it needs instead of the stress of traveling. I feel like that has a bigger impact on your body than what we realize.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Did you stay in a hotel or Airbnb?
So we stayed at the race hotel,
Perfect.
the Moody Gardens, which is perfect.
Yeah, so you're right there, and we've talked about it before. They probably, and I, I've raced. I think I'm on my eighth 70.3. They have the best parking situation there with having the race right there at Moody Gardens because it's set up as an amusement entertainment area. There's plenty of parking, but staying at the host hotel, you didn't have to worry about parking at all, right? You're just walking back and forth and the whole thing.
Yes, that was perfect. I mean, Ironman Village is in the parking lot, so I mean, it was perfect. Didn't have to worry. Even if we went out to go get something to eat, it wasn't any problem finding parking when you got back.
100%. So were you able to, or did you have planned to do any training in advance? So you get there on Thursday. I mean, obviously your fitness is what your fitness is. You're not going to gain anything, but did you do any shakeout runs? Did you get a ride in? Did you do a practice swim? Did you do anything like that?
So I actually found a post through TriDot that there was a practice ride, and so
Cool.
I did that on Friday,
Okay.
and that was nice. We started on the seawall, which is the main, strip of the bike course. The wind was very different that day. It was kind of head on the way out, and then at your back on the way back, and we were flying on the way back without putting any kind of power down. It was pretty amazing, but we did that on Friday, and then Saturday, I really wanted to do a practice swim on site. Most places, have that
Yeah.
as a as an option, but you were not allowed to swim there on site. And I couldn't find, as much as I love swimming, I get nervous swimming by myself. So I couldn't find a good group. So I ended up swimming in the pool inside Moody Gardens, which
Okay.
was an indoor, and I don't think it was heated because I think that was the coldest swim I have ever done. And I did 1,000 yards, and even at the very end of it, I think I still had goosebumps.
Oh my
So
goodness.
that's all I did.
Okay. So you raced Galveston the same weekend I raced Oceanside, which was in California. And I've already done a detailed race recap. We've already talked about how cold it was in California. What was the weather like here in Texas that weekend? Because I wasn't here. I don't know. Was it warm? Was it cold? How was the weather?
It was actually really nice. It was kind of cool in the morning, but not cold enough for a jacket. The water was, sometimes when I get in cold water, I feel like it just takes your breath away, and I
Yeah.
was really nervous about that. But the water, I felt like it was perfect. It got hot on the run,
Okay.
pretty quick. But other than that, it was pretty nice.
Okay. So you weren't able to get in your outdoor swim practice. And so if you're listening to the podcast, I know that there is a small body of water off of 63 next to the Hooters that I've seen athletes do practice swims in. It's probably about 500 yards. So if you're listening to the podcast, like, hey, I want to do it next year, where can I practice swim? I know people swim there. There's a rocky little thing you can navigate yourself down to. Obviously, like you said, Elisa, don't swim by yourself, swim with a group or whatever. But it sounds like you did what you could with what you had to work with.
You're right.
Awesome. Okay. So when did we check in? We check in on Friday, or did we wait until Saturday to do athlete check-in?
I checked in Saturday. I kind of like to do it at the last time that you can because since you have your assigned spot, and my bike is kind of like my baby, so I don't like to leave it out there. So I like to leave it out by itself at the shortest amount of time possible.
Nice. Nice. Okay. Did you get the opportunity to go to any of the athlete briefings?
I did listen to it, or I watched it. They streamed it. Even though I've done, a few 70.3s, I always like to hear them. I feel like there's always some little bit of information that's beneficial, to watch, something to watch out for or to know about. So I do always like to listen to them.
Yeah, me as well. Was there anything that jumps to mind that you learned that was different about the Texas course that was covered in the briefing that you're like, oh, I'm glad they covered that?
Let's take a quick break.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we are the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
I know there was, but I can't think of it at the moment.
Okay, I remember the first year that I did it, and it's changed since. The swim exit was there was like some kind of barnacle bed or something like that, and they were telling us not to stand up too early, or you would cut your feet. And so that was one of the things that they covered in the beginning. They've since now put like the stairs down and the carpet and the whole thing, and so you don't have to deal with that. But I was just curious if they had covered anything. In Oceanside, there was definitely some things that I wish I had gone to athlete briefing and learned about, and I didn't make it this year. But yeah, so definitely, I always encourage everybody, definitely go to athlete briefing. I mean, obviously, you want to read the athlete guide, but there's just some things that don't translate, in my opinion, and it's good to either attend in person or listen to it online if it's made available. Okay, so how are we feeling going into Saturday night with the race the next morning? Are you excited? Or do you have any last minute nerves? Do you just feel like, hey, hay's in the barn type of thing? Like, how are we feeling?
To be honest, I was at this race, I was starting to get pretty burnt out. You know, my last training sessions, I was just trying to check the box kind of thing. I think I had, this race was too close to my last race, so I didn't really get any recovery. I just kind of went straight back into training. So at this point, I was just like, I'm ready to get it over with. The only goal I had was to beat that time that I did in Cozumel, which that's all I wanted going in. I just wanted to beat that time and kind of enjoy it and finish.
And I think it's good to have a goal. Like we as athletes know, I believe there's nothing guaranteed. Anything can go wrong. And we should always have the mindset of, hey, anytime we cross the finish line, that's a win. Mm-hmm. But I think we're competitive by nature, right? Or we wouldn't do what we do. Right. And so I think there's always that little bit of goal, whether it's to be better than you did last time or to, you know, improve by a percentage or whatever. So I think having the goal of being or doing better than your last race so that you have a clean slate going into this next race season, I think is a good goal. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we get up Sunday morning. Are we up any earlier than normal? Because you didn't gain any time zones for this race, I'm guessing, right? So you're up at normal time, or did you have to get up earlier than normal?
No, I got up pretty normal time. I'm one of those people that can get up, get dressed, and go out the door. You know, like I don't wake up super early. I give myself maybe 30, 45 minutes, you know, to the time that I have to leave. And so being right there where I could just walk to the start, it was just perfect, which was nice to get that little bit of extra sleep, you know?
Yeah, oh, for sure. So when did we start our nutrition plan for the day? Did we have anything prior to the start of the race that was race specific, or how did we tackle that portion of it?
So I did take two cliff blocks before the swim. Okay. I feel like I really like that type of nutrition, but my stomach can't handle it very well during the race. Okay. So I just took two before the swim, and yeah, that was it. I can't really eat very much that early either, so that was kind of pretty much my breakfast.
Okay. And are you carrying your tailor-made special mixed fluids with you, or are you taking on course fluids and nutrition as necessary, just as a general rule?
I don't ever like to depend on course anything. So I always bring everything that I want to use. So I had pre-mixed Tailwind.
Tailwind. Okay.
Yeah. And that's what I use during all the bike portion.
Perfect. And are you pretty much like I'm mostly fluid gel based. I don't eat a lot of things. I consume the majority of my stuff through fluids. Are you similar, or do you have are you eating a peanut butter jelly sandwich halfway through the bike leg?
I find that I can't really stomach any solids when I'm
at all.
When I'm even the longer distances, I take in Tailwind in my water, and then a gel or two, you know, kind of as needed.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's kind of how I am too. I think it works good for me. Okay. All right. So let's get into the race, because being the sports journalist that I am, I have all of your numbers written down. So and I didn't look up what time the race actually started. So I'm going to back up and ask, was there a pro field at the race this year?
There
Okay, so there was. Okay, that's because they were all at Oceanside. There were like 200 pros in California this week. So do you know what time the race started?
I did not pay attention to that. I know it was a few minutes, I think after seven, but not much.
Okay. The reason I'm asking is you got in the water, according to the Ironman tracker, which is, I consider the gold standard from my journalistic standpoint, you got in the water at 7:13. So do you think you were 13 minutes after the start of the race in the water? You think that's about accurate?
Pretty close, yeah.
Okay, okay. And do you seed yourself pretty pretty much towards the front? I'm from memory, the times I've done it, it's self-seeding. It's single file, though, so it's a tricky thing. So unless you're unless you get in line early, or you're one of those people, and I'm not, who will bump past everybody like, hey, excuse me, coming through, you're stuck where you end up.
Right.
So did you get in line pretty early, or how did you manage to get in the water 13-ish minutes after the start of the race?
I did, and I kind of got up maybe a little bit faster than my swim time. It seems like people, even though it's a self-seeding thing, people don't really self-seed very well. So yeah, I did get up there a little bit earlier, and I just went just a little bit ahead of my swim time.
Gotcha. And I, yeah, I've shared on the podcast before, I jump ahead all the time. I want to get in the water as soon as I can. I mean, I don't want to be with the ultra fast swimmers,
right?
But it doesn't matter. I don't think it matters where you start. There's going to be people that you're faster than, and there's going to be people that are faster than you. So might as well get in the water as early as possible so that you can get on the run course as early as possible. Mm-hmm. That's my strategy. Okay. How'd you think your swim was gonna go? And then how did your swim go? Cause I have your swim, time right here.
So, I have been slacking a little bit on my swim training. So really, and I do this a lot with my races. I try not to go too hard on the swim because I have so much ahead of me. So I feel like I reserve a little bit. So I didn't expect a whole lot out of my swim, to be honest. Okay. And I kind of surprised myself. I did better. I mean, I wasn't like way, you know, an amazing time, but I did do better than what I expected on the swim. I didn't have an exact number or anything, but.
Yeah. How did you feel though? Like, did you, when you got out of the water, just having raced Cozumel where you swallowed a bunch of salt water. Now this is, it's in a protected area. So it's not in the open ocean, but it is in the, it's kind of a brackish water. It's salt water. It doesn't have the highest, you know, salt content, but it is salt water. You breathe to one side, which I do as well, which can be okay, but can also be problematic at times. So when you came out of the water, regardless of your time, how did you feel?
I feel pretty great. The water was calm. It was nice. Not what I'm used to with the ocean swims, even the little local stuff that I do. It was really nice. So I felt pretty good. I felt like I could actually, I wasn't fighting anything. I wasn't fighting the water. It felt smooth, and I felt pretty good coming
out. Well, cool. Well, you ended up swimming a 40:35, which is faster than both times I've swam Galveston. So I don't know if that makes, I don't know how you interpret that, at all, but it's definitely faster than I am. So that gave you a 206 per 100, which it's funny. I was talking to somebody today and we were talking about swim times and I was like, 2 minutes per 100 is about the middle ground, right? If you're faster than 2 minutes per 100, that's pretty good. If you're slower than 2 minutes to 100, you know, you have plenty of room for improvement. I remember when I started, I was swimming 2:35 per 100, and you know, now I'm at, in the, and of course pool swims are different, we all know, But I'm about a 148 to 152 pull swimmer per 100. Depends on how I'm feeling on any given day. But in open water, 206 per 100 is really good, in my opinion. So I don't know how you feel about that. But it puts you at 21st was the note that I made in your age group, which is good.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, having raced Galveston or Ironman 70.3 Texas, I'm pretty familiar with the transition setup. So transition is right off the swim course. Like you come out of the water, you run maybe 50 yards and you're into the transition. Now it depends on where you are in transition and transition. You may have a longer way to go, but transition is close. How was your transition experience? Did they have wetsuit peelers? Did you take advantage of them? Did you have any trouble finding your bike? Talk me through that.
So they had told us that they were not going to have them. And then I come out the water and they're there, and I don't think I've ever used a peeler before. So I kind of, because it was unexpected and not part of my plan in my head, I just kind of went past them.
Went right past them.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I did take one turn wrong going to my bike, but it wasn't, you know, I could find it. I saw it and I just, you know, I was just one row over. It wasn't a big deal or anything.
Okay. And so we already talked about the fact that the weather was pretty nice. Mm-hmm. So how are you preparing yourself for the bike? And so I'm going to ask you a couple questions because these are the scenarios. So are you wearing your tri-suit underneath? I mean, I guess you almost have to, right? Women's options are more limited than men's options in this scenario, right? Because I can swim with my tri shorts and my wetsuit and that's it, right? And then I can just put my jersey on over top, or I can wear my jersey underneath. I've seen some women who wear a one piece tri kit with like a sports bra, and then they won't put the top of the kit on until after they take their wetsuit off, which I don't know that I understand. How are you prepared for that situation? Are you short sleeve, long sleeve, calf sleeve, or arm sleeves? Like what are you prepared to ride your bike in?
So I just had a one piece sleeved, tri kit, and I had it, you know, I didn't change or anything in transition. I tried to do the least amount of things that I, you know, to cut my time down in transition.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just had the one piece, and that's it under the wetsuit.
Okay. And what about your shoes? Are you do you have your shoes clipped in to your pedals, and you're running barefoot to the mount line, or are you put your shoes on, do that awkward clippy through the through the asphalt? Or there's another strategy, which I was just introduced to, which is carry your shoes and run barefoot to the mount line and put your shoes on. So how are you navigating that? Because those all go into our transition time.
Right. So I'm kind of a little bit on the clumsy side. So I don't try to clip my shoes into the bike ahead of time because I just feel like I'll crash trying to slide my feet into them.
Get on.
So I put my shoes on in transition and run with them on to the mount line.
Okay. Well, you had a 301 T1 time, which is very good. Especially when we compare that to my 14 minute transition time and Oceanside. Now there were some different factors, of course, but 301 is pretty efficient. I mean, it sounds like you got through, you were able to navigate your wetsuit by yourself. You made that awkward clippity run in the shoes, which I got to be honest, I'm a clumsy person too, which is why I try to avoid that because I'm so afraid I'm going to trip or fall running with those shoes on asphalt. I almost did that one time and it's got me all freaked out, to be honest. But once you hit the bike course, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good. I have a tendency when I get on the bike, I have all this energy that I'm just ready to go. So I tried to, you know, dial it down and not go out too hard in the beginning, because I always do that. I did follow TriDot, and I kind of had looked at what, you know, TriDot has a RaceX plan for you of what target power that you want to stay at. And the target power that it wanted me to stay at was actually 112.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And in my head, I thought, well, I know I can do better than that. So my target power when I was on the bike, I tried to keep it at around 120, which I'm a pretty small person. So it doesn't take a whole lot of power for me to move. So in my head, I really thought I was at 120, because I was going above 120 a little bit and a little below. But the funny thing is that when I finished and I looked at my actual power, I was at 112 exactly.
Really?
Yep.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So we're going to pause there for just a second, because we talked about the fact that we're both TriDot athletes, and we talk about TriDot a lot, but I don't know that we've really covered RaceX too much. And so RaceX, basically, as I understand it, and I'm not going to go into technical details, but just kind of high level overview, it takes your training data, which is what you've done over the preceding weeks, along with the race itself and the environmental conditions. So it's going to take into consideration Galveston, the temperature, the elevation, and all those things. And it's going to predict, based on what you've done leading up to that race, what it thinks you would do or should do to optimize your race experience. And it is very eerie how close it is at times, isn't it?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm gonna ask you a question relative to what you just said. So when you are on the bike, are you a Garmin or Wahoo, some other company I'm unfamiliar with? What kind of technology do you have?
So on my bike, I have a Wahoo computer.
You have a Wahoo computer. Okay. So I'm not familiar with Wahoo, but I have a Garmin. But I do know, I have this question, because this is something I learned a little bit. And it may not have played as much of a factor on Galveston, but on my Garmin computer, I have the ability, and I have it activated to where it doesn't measure zero power, meaning if I am coasting, it doesn't average that time into my power output. So it only actually, when it shows my average power, it only measures when I'm actually pedaling, if that makes sense at all. Mm-hmm. Do you know if your Wahoo does the same?
I don't, but I did not know that. So now I'll have to definitely look into it and see, because that's interesting.
Yeah, and it really comes into play on a hilly course, right? Where you're going downhill and you're not pedaling, or you're, I mean, if you're soft pedaling it, that counts, because it's registering power. And so it goes into your number. So hypothetically, if you go up the hill and you're pushing 300 watts and you're soft pedaling down the other side at 50 watts, it's going to impact your overall average. But if I don't pedal at all and I strictly coast, it would just register the power that I produced going up the hill. And it's interesting. Just thought I'd throw that out there. So I was just curious if that was why your perceived 120 ended up being the 112.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not a coaster. I don't like to ever coast. I like to just pedal the whole time, which I guess is why I like a flat course too. It doesn't bother me to just keep going evenly. Yeah.
Nothing is more demoralizing. And I didn't experience it this race at Oceanside, because I was freaked out. But my bike is actually pretty fast. I can pass people going downhill who are pedaling. I just get in aero and I can pass. And so it'll go so fast that you can't even catch up. Like I couldn't spin my legs fast enough to really engage the rear hub. It's still free spinning. Yeah. And so I just don't pedal. I wait till I catch up the other side. Anyway. Okay. You had mentioned earlier that when you did the practice ride on Friday, that there was a wind, and your friend had failed to mention the wind. Now, I wrote down your recorded splits in the miles per hour, right? So there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it looks like 6 mats that you crossed, or 6 timing spots, and they measured your miles per hour. So I'm going to ask you this question before I reveal to you what your miles per hour splits indicate. And I'm going to ask you a question is, was there a noticeable headwind, tailwind on race day?
I did not feel it. If there was, it was nothing like the practice day. Because okay. In my head, I didn't feel like I was pushing into a headwind going out. And then when I turned around, kind of hoping there would be a tailwind, I really didn't feel like I was pushing much less. So yeah. I couldn't tell. I just felt like there was wind everywhere, but I couldn't tell if it was helping me or hurting me or what it was doing.
Yeah. Well, so I didn't go this year, but I've been the last 2 years, and the last 2 years there was a tailwind going out, a headwind coming back. So much so that other spectators that were following their athletes were concerned because they were so far behind. They were concerned that there was an accident. But looking at your splits, these are your mile per hour splits. 20.21, 19.98, 19.13, 19.28, 19.69, and 20.17. Those are very evenly bunched miles per hour. So I was thinking to myself, there couldn't have been a noticeable wind one way or the other, or you did an incredible job of anticipating and counteracting whichever wind you experienced, because those are very consistent numbers.
Mm-hmm. I don't think there was much direct wind either way. I just kept looking at the power number and just tried to keep it at that even 120 the whole time.
That is awesome. Yeah, you did a great job in that. And so, did you have a projected bike finish time? If you, like, in your mind, like, if I hit 112 or if I hit the 120, that should put me at a X. Did you have that going into it?
I think I was dissecting my previous race times, and I think I knew I'd be under 3 hours, but I didn't expect to be much under 3 hours on the bike course. That's kind of all I had going into it.
Okay. Well, you turned out a 249.51, so you went sub 250. For somebody who didn't own a bike or really wasn't sure they could ride a bike when you started this triathlon journey, that's really, really good.
Thank you.
Yeah, that is awesome. Good for you. So you averaged 19.73 miles per hour, and which ranked you 13th in your age group. So you went from 21st swim to 13th bike. That's awesome.
Thank you. Just
bumping down the ladder. Okay. So you come into T2. How are you feeling?
I think I was pretty excited because I knew that my bike time was a lot better than what I had anticipated.
Yeah, I bet. And how were your legs feeling? Did you feel like, even though you did have this bike time better than you expected, did you feel like, hey, I didn't overcook the bike, I feel good? Or were you like, we'll see how it goes?
So when I was on the bike, my legs felt fine. But as soon as I got off the bike, I could feel some pretty intense, like, stiffness in my legs. And I was kind of worried about it, you know, trying to run to my bike rack. But it seemed to loosen up. But, you know, that initial getting off the bike, I could definitely feel some strong leg pain there.
Gotcha. Okay. And anything out of the ordinary in T2? So you rack your bike, put your helmet, grab your race bib, any nutrition, anything, put your race shoes on. Do you tie your shoes? Do you have quick laces? Do you change socks? Anything like that?
I normally do use quick laces, but I have a newer pair of shoes that I didn't have a chance to change, and changing those laces out are always such a pain in the butt. So I didn't even mess with it this time. I just had regular laces on them. T2 was kind of uneventful. I found my rack, was able to kind of get in and out decently.
Gotcha. And what kind of shoes are you wearing?
So I'm using the Nike Vaporflies.
Vaporflies. Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay. And how was the run course for you?
So I had some friends that told me going into it that it was, you know, just a 3-loop course. But when I looked at the map, I really didn't understand it at all. It is the most confusing run that I have ever done.
It was there's a lot of turns.
Yeah, it was a loop, but with like out and backs at every little area, which was kind of cool though, because the ground that you're covering is such a small area that you have huge crowds everywhere because you're in such a small area. So that was actually really nice. I mean, you had people cheering you on almost the whole run course. I liked that. And I really didn't know. I think maybe by the third lap, I kind of knew where I was going a little bit, but it was very confusing.
Yeah, it's definitely the epitome of pros and cons. Mm-hmm. Because it's a technical course. Seems like there's one section where you almost run through sand, like a little sand section of like a little play area or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of elevation change, but there's a couple of little hills here and there, a couple of rollers or whatever. But the trade-off is it is so well spectated because, like you said, it's in a tight area. It is in that entertainment area. There's things for the spectators to do when their athletes are off on the bike course. There's the dinosaur exhibit, and there's a lot of stuff to keep little kids busy. So it is perfect for all of those things. The trade-off is there's just a lot of turns.
Yeah, sure. There was this one little bridge that I remember crossing it the first time, and it was like an out and back part of the loop. And in my head, the first thing I could think of was, if this is an out and back on this one bridge and we're doing this 3 times, that means that I have to cross this bridge 6 times during this
six
race.
6 times.
Yeah.
That's funny. That is funny. Well, cool. So what is your half marathon at the end of a 70.3 best time?
Oh gosh. In the past, it's usually pretty terrible.
Is it?
I do, like because of Gulf Coast, it's usually, you know, mid-May, it's very hot. I tend to fall apart on the run course. Just by the end of it, I'm done, you know. So I was kind of expecting that going into this one too.
Okay. Well, you ran a 2:09:14.
It was right? definitely a lot better than I would have thought. The last, I guess my previous PR that I did mm-hmm. was at Gulf Coast the year that it was the year of COVID, and the full and the half were on the same day because the half was postponed. Okay. So it was in November, and the half didn't start until 11 o'clock, which is weird. Okay. So you didn't get into the water until almost noon. And so mm-hmm. by the time that you got on the run course, it was starting to kind of get dark and get cool. So I never thought I would have an environment where I could beat my PR time, because that was just perfect. You're starting late, you get the cool, you know, the cool evening, and you normally don't get that. You're normally running, you know, in the worst time.
Yeah. So is this, were you able to beat your Gulf Coast time in Texas this year?
Yes. So I beat it by 20 minutes.
Wow. So you didn't just beat it. You crushed it.
Yes.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Yeah. It's interesting why, and I'm sure there's logistics or whatever, but when I raced Waco in 2020, two, I think it was on Sunday, and they had the full on Saturday. And so we started late as well. And so we were on the run course at night. And I was like, this is great.
Right.
Like, it's not super hot. And it's kind of gave you that Iron Man feel because you were finishing under the lights and the whole thing. It's crazy why they don't do that more often. Yeah. So you had a, 209.14. So you ended up with a 5:45. And I have two numbers written down, and I'm not sure which your which one is your finish number, to be honest with you, because one of them was your RaceX number. So you finished in 5:45.21.
Yes.
And your RaceX prediction, which was predicted prior to you starting the race, it wasn't adjusted after the race started or after you finished the bike or anything like that, but a couple days or a couple weeks in advance, it predicted that you would complete the race in 5:45.28.
Yeah. And when I saw that number originally, I kind of laughed at it. I was like, they really have a lot of faith in me.
Yeah. You missed it by 7 seconds. Actually, you beat it by 7 seconds.
Yeah.
That is awesome. So you cross the finish line, you go sub six. Now, we didn't talk about what your best overall best time was. I know that this was a PR because we already talked about it. What was your previous best 70.3 time?
So it was 6 hours and 6 minutes.
Wow. That is awesome. So without flying to Oregon like I did and taking advantage of the super swift current like I did, you managed to shave a considerable amount of time off of your 70.3 time. What do you attribute it to?
I'm really not sure. I guess everything just kind of lined up just right. I feel like, you know, I felt good going into it. Nutrition was good. The weather was good. I feel like sometimes, you know, everybody has a good day and a bad day. No matter how much we train, we all have the bad days, and it just happened to be, I think, a good day for me.
Wow. And so is there any point of the race over the past couple of weeks that you look back and you're like, I could have improved this particular area? Or are you just like so satisfied with the experience that you're like, hey, I don't think I could have done it any better? It was just all the things that you just said. It was the weather, the conditions, the mindset, the nutrition, all that. How have you processed it between the time the race finished into today?
I feel like I could have done better, but I was so happy with my time that that didn't matter. I didn't expect to do that well during the run course. You know, you start trying to do math in your head, and it's not always easy when you're running.
No, it's not.
But I kept looking at my total time and thinking, okay, if I could just, I could do an 11-minute pace for the next, you know, 2 or 3 miles, and I can still finish under 6 hours. And I kept trying to do the math in my head, and I had never been sub 6 hours. So I'm super excited about it.
That is awesome. That is awesome. So you ended up finishing 14th in your age group, if my jumbled notes are accurate.
Yes.
That is incredible. Did you go to awards?
I did. Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Do you know how awards went? Was there any opportunity for a roll down?
No, not for my age group. So everybody, the first, I think it was like the first, second, and third all accepted. So there was no roll down, unfortunately.
Gotcha. Okay. I was just curious. I know there were a couple of age groups in California based on some people that I follow on Instagram who got a spot. Looks like there was a couple of age groups that it rolled down. And it comes up on the podcast all the time. I completely recognize the fact if you accept a roll down spot, you qualified. That's just how it goes. And so there's no, there are, and everybody has their opinion. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. There's some people that believe, no, roll downs don't count. I think roll downs count 100%. So I was just curious, having finished in 14th place, if you were in that area to where it looked like it might get to you, or if it got to you and you were like, no, I can't go this year, or maybe next year, whatever type of thing.
Yeah, I would love to go one day. There was lots of roll downs in the other age groups.
Gotcha. Yeah. I've said it on the podcast before. I missed a roll down spot in Waco by 10 minutes. And what sucks is I had given up on the run, kind of, I wasn't having the greatest race. And I kind of was like, you know what? It's not going to happen. I'm just going to get through it. And so I live with a lot of regret, thinking if I realized I was within 10 minutes, I probably could have finished 10 minutes sooner than I did. But you just never know, right? You just don't know.
Exactly. Anyway.
Okay. Well, so a couple of things we haven't learned. One, you mentioned your bike and how you don't like to leave it in transition any longer than you have to. But we didn't learn what kind of bike you have.
So I have a Cervelo P5.
Ooh,
and
nice.
It is, yeah, it's my baby pretty much.
Does it have a name? Does your bike have a name?
La Reina, which means the queen in Spanish.
Nice. I like it. What color? I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce that name. I'm not even going to embarrass myself.
It's black with a teal mint colored accent on it.
Oh, nice. How long have you had it?
So it's a 2020. Got it in 2020.
Cool. Okay. And what is next for you?
I'm not quite sure. I kept saying leading up to this race that I need a break from the 70.3, and when I mean a break, I mean maybe a late race next year instead of one this year or early race. I will say the training for this race was really difficult. This is, you know, a very early season race.
Yeah.
And I didn't consider that when I signed up. So there was a lot of winter training, a lot of indoor training. You can't, you know, leave work and go ride your bike because it's dark. So
yeah,
a lot of the training had to be done on the trainer, weekends on the treadmill, because I don't like to run in freezing cold weather. And that's kind of going to be in my considerations for choosing a and my next race.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's one of those things that, is definitely worth noting. I had a conversation with Brooke Fuller last night, and, she's an athlete who is just getting started in her triathlon journey. And we're actually going to document her whole experience from introduction to triathlon to completing an Ironman branded event. And so we did a check-in last night that will have been released by the time your episode airs. But after we were done with the recording, we were just having a conversation, and she asked my opinion of Waco versus Galveston. And what you just said there, Elisa, was one of the things I told her, which is I really like the Galveston course, but you got to train through the winter, right? And you have to be really, really disciplined to get it done, because the days are shorter. The weather is not as, it's not as good. It's cold. It's often, it seems like it's rainier for some reason in the winter. And your opportunity to get outside is just not as much. And so you got to really, really have your mind set on getting it done, or it's just too easy to skip. It's just too easy to skip workouts.
Right.
The flip side is you have to train in the hot, right? You got to train in the hot part of the year, but the days are longer. And so you can get up earlier, or you can train late in the evening. And so it's a little bit more flexible. And so I definitely hear what you're saying. Training for Oceanside was very similar. I missed a lot of workouts because of that, right? Because my schedule just didn't allow for it. And by the time you get home, you're just whooped. And the last thing you want to do is get on the trainer for an hour, and then you got to take a shower and get cleaned up and all of that. And just like, it's not even worth it at this point. So I completely understand what you're saying there. So you're going to take a little bit of a break.
Mm-hmm. From the long distance. Yeah, I still like I love doing all the short sprints and Olympic distances.
Nice. Isn't it crazy to where, and this is just about perspective, I guess, right? And so listeners of the podcast, we have just getting started, training for their first sprint, or having completed 12 full distance races. Mr. Jim Risto, I'm talking about you. But isn't it funny that at some point in our career or our journey, we get to the point where we're like, I don't really have to train for a sprint. That's just like, I could just go out and do a sprint, or I could do an Olympic, or, you know, hey, I signed up for a 20K trail race a couple mm-hmm. weeks ago, probably a month ago. And I told my wife earlier, I was like, that race is next weekend. It's a 20K trail race. And she's like, are you ready? I'm like, how bad could it be? Just 20K, right? I'll be okay. It'll be a tough day, but I'll get through it, right? So if you're listening to the podcast, that should be encouraging. You'll get there someday, and you'll be able to look back and be like, 20K or an Olympic distance, not a big deal. I got it. That's not even a hard day. That's awesome. Well, cool. Well, Lisa, you have been so much fun to hang out with you, and I want to be respectful of your time, especially since this was our second attempt at recording the podcast, but I really, really wanted to talk to you, and I appreciate you hanging out with me and sharing your experience and letting me live vicariously through you, because I, with the exception of going to Oregon, I have yet to go sub 6. What you were able to put together, I am so impressed by. And a little jealous. I'm not going to lie. I'm secure enough to where I can say that. So I just appreciate you hanging out and sharing your experience with us. And as we start to wrap the podcast up, I always ask my guests if they have any final thoughts or words of advice or words of encouragement or anything along those lines that they would like to end the podcast with. So I'm going to ask you, do you have anything like that that you'd like to share?
Not really. Just keep going. I don't know. Anytime that you feel discouraged, just keep going.
Okay. And I think, yeah, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but I think that in itself is true. So I think there's going to be times where we run into adversity, and mm-hmm. there's going to be times where things get hard. And I was actually thinking about it, kind of what you just said right there. I went and ran 5 miles after work, and I didn't want to. And I've been thinking about the power of the phrase "just one more." And I've actually written a TED Talk about it and how powerful that is. And it's kind of like that: just keep going, just do one more, just do mm-hmm. one more. And I was at that point where I was like, okay, just one more driveway. Just one more street, just one more mile, right? Just keep going. Like mm-hmm. you said, just keep going. Things are going to get tough, but just keep going.
Right. I almost didn't do this race because I was just so burnt out. And I thought, man, what if I wouldn't have done it? You know, I had the best race and I was experiencing burnout and I didn't really want to do it. And look, you just never know. You just keep going.
Just keep going. I like that. Well, cool. Well, you'll have to let me know when you pick your race for next season so that we can track you.
Okay.
Just kind of keep in touch. Let us know how your local sprints and Olympics turn out. And who knows, maybe you change your mind and you're like, hey, I'm in for a fall race. What is that? Ironman 70.3 Florida in Orlando. That's not probably too far from you.
Mm-hmm.
Right, in December, close out the year strong.
Yeah.
maybe not, I don't know. Okay. Well, cool. Well, we appreciate it, Alisa. Congratulations on an incredible race, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. If you have any questions, advice that you would like to share, or would like to be a guest on the show and share your story, you can email everydayironmanpodcast@gmail.com. Also, don't forget to follow on Instagram at Everyday Ironman Podcast. Until next time, keep moving forward.